let's talk for a minute about that process of submitting trust to you in advance. When do you like to see the trust? Does it matter to you if you see it in advance?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And the sooner the better.
And what is the process that it goes through within your trust department?
Well, I'm the person that reviews them and looks at the terms, terminations, you know, what we can pay or not pay. And I've also usually already had a conversation with the personal injury attorney or the drafting attorney, the guardian ad litem attorney, like whatever the situation is. So it gives me insight as to when I'm reading the document, what would be helpful for that situation. And have a conversation with the drafting attorney about it.
And two, again, remember in the universe of special needs trusts, our big two categories is third-party trusts and first-party or self-settled trusts. Mm-hmm. So third-party versus self-settled or first-party. And those first-party trusts are often created in the context of a personal injury action. So perhaps someone who became disabled in an accident or may have already had disabilities is recovering a sum of money, and that's going to go into a first-party trust in order to maintain those benefits. That's very often drafted by an attorney who kind of specializes in the area, maybe with a great depth of knowledge, maybe new to the field, but at least some specialty in that area. And then you have the other type of trust, which would be a third-party trust. And in my experience, those are more likely than a first-party trust to be created by an attorney who might typically just be a standard estate planning attorney, mm-hmm. but happens to have a client with special needs or a family with a child with special needs. And so they may be delving into an area they have not delved into prior. Do you handle many third-party trusts?
More so lately because of COVID, and a lot of people that have disabled family members have now kind of, oh my goodness, I'm maybe only 56 years old, but I could die of COVID next week or something. So we do have more of that. And even now when you say, well, it's the estate planning attorneys that usually drafts those, I still see payback provisions in those. So it is important that somebody reviews them to remove that and explain to the... It's because the estate planning attorneys don't usually work in this field, and it is, I think, very specialized. So it is helpful to get to review the draft before it's finalized.
And when we're talking about the terms of the trust guiding a trust department in making distributions, and again, I'm kind of presuming with that statement that we have a corporate trustee as opposed to an individual trustee, mm-hmm. but when we're looking at third-party trusts, I think we're more likely to get into kind of customized language about what types of trust distributions the settlor envisions for that beneficiary. One, for example, this trust may pay for UT. This trust may not pay for Texas A&M. And that, that is not a personal bias, but you do see that kind of
restrictive language.
Restrictiveness. We had a family who they had an odd relationship with the former daughter-in-law and grandchild, and would only allow distributions as long as the child and mother lived south of the Red River. And if they moved north of the Red River, anywhere north, but the real target was Oklahoma, but if they moved anywhere mm-hmm. north of the Red River, no trust distributions at all. So that really can be that restrictive and certainly can limit what a trustee can do in terms of distributions for that beneficiary. Mm-hmm. Have y'all seen any oddball, before we go to the next topic, have y'all seen any oddball or strange restrictions that either you had to have changed or that you had to abide within?
Not in the personal needs trust, the special needs trust area, but in the personal trust, where there are testamentary trusts for a child, but they're adults, you know, 50, 60 years old, and grandchildren.
So I would say, all in all, when you're drafting, try to use that fully discretionary standard. Now, maybe letters of guidance would be helpful if you have a particular university you love and the other ones you hate, then a letter of guidance would be nice, but including that in the trust can be unnecessarily burdensome. And as the trustee, don't just assume that everything is fully discretionary, because you may have odd provisions in there. So be mindful of that. Now, we've had a lot of discussion already today about benefits, what specific benefits we need to protect. So I think all of you have heard a good deal about that and probably came in fairly familiar with most of those programs. But again, very, very common programs that we see our beneficiaries on would be SSDI, SSI, Medicare, Medicaid. And it's very important to understand that special needs trusts were created to protect SSI and Medicaid. That's the very essence of an SNT. That's why they exist. Now, they might accidentally protect other benefits, but really the focus is going to be on SSI and Medicaid. So when you get a lot of questions about other benefits, housing, food stamps, SNAP, you can say, probably going to protect those, but we can't always assure that it's going to have that same impact. What benefits are you seeing most commonly for your beneficiaries?
The SSI and Medicaid, but I was going to add that recently we were having a discussion, and there's benefits, spouses of veterans that have died.